Okay, yeah, I'm not going to be able to hold this the whole time, so we're going to have to make adjustments here. I'm Brenda, I'm an alcoholic, and I like to run the whole show. I need microphone help.
Just squeeze it in. Bam.
Right.
I got this.
All right. Thanks, guys.
I think I turned it off.
Hello?
Nope.
Okay, we're good. We're good. Setting a timer. I may be brief. I may be long-winded. We don't know. Anyway, let me start again. I'm Brenda. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, guys. Grateful to be here. My sobriety date is July 17th, 1991. My sponsor's DeAndre. My home group is the We Care group, Tuesday nights over by the college. All of my sobriety comes from, and I'm so grateful to that hall. They're always, you know, they're my OG home group, and I'm so grateful to the Open Door. Grateful to be here. Shout out to Deb. I'll tell you a quick Deb story. We were going to the Open Door. I was a newcomer. I was brand new, and I went to this wonderful Monday night candlelight women's there, and I met my first sponsor there. And back in those days, people were smoking at the, during the meeting. You know, we had ashtrays, stuff had to be cleaned up after the meeting. Deb had the audacity to ask me to help clean ashtrays after the meeting was over. And, you know, I gave her the look. And I said, I don't smoke. And the lady that became my sponsor, Becky, said, sweetie, I'll help you. Let's grab the ashtrays. And I was like, okay. And I fucking cleaned ashtrays. And, you know, I'm grateful. I'll be grateful to the day I die to Deb for having the audacity to ask me to contribute and participate in my sobriety and be part of the group. I'm so grateful for that. So anyway, I'm going to share in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now, hopefully. God, please help me. I started drinking at 16, and I'm sorry that I waited that long. I stole that from Patio, but I really am. I took my first drink. I had went to a football game. So what I remember about that first drink was it felt like the world just glowed. And I felt okay inside. And as I drank, I felt like I could do anything, be anything. I could dance. I could talk to people. It did for me what I couldn't do for myself. And I was a blackout drinker from the beginning. And through high school, I was blackout drinking. I had very violent, crazy relationships where there was lots of drinking and using starting in high school. And the general story is that, you know, I basically lost every job I got or I'd walk off the job. And it got difficult to maintain housing. I didn't think it was because of my drinking. I thought it was because you people were mean and you guys had problems with me. I didn't have a problem, but you guys were the problem. And I found myself, I was about 19, and I couldn't pay my rent. And my roommate at the time, he'd had some experience with AA, and he says, well, Brenda, if we go to AA, we'll be able to pay the rent. And I said, okay, let's go to AA. And so we went to AA for a week. They did not pay our rent. But somehow, miraculously, we had rent money by the end of the week, probably stole from our jobs, and, it was time to celebrate. And so by Friday, you know, we were back at the bar celebrating, You know, and the chip, that welcome chip will get you a drink. At least it did back then. It was good times. And I didn't think any more about Alcoholics Anonymous. They were very nice people. But it wasn't for me. So about 23 years of age, now I'm kind of bouncing around. My stuff's in my car. I think we call it couch surfing nowadays, but, you know, I was crashing on some, in some kid's bed while, because I was the driver. I had a car. So I was a shot caller. I had a car in Tampa, and so I had a place to stay because I had a car. But things were getting worse and worse for me. I had a vision that of kind of like the end of the road. There was just a crash, and I don't know that I needed to do something. And so my best thought was, I'm going to join the military because now I'm thin enough to be able to join the military because I'm not eating. So there's still no problem with alcohol. It's just I'm having some life difficulties. And so I joined the Air Force, somehow miraculously have a clean drug test. And off I go to San Antonio, Texas for tech school in the Air Force. So I detoxed in basic training, and every day was like a nightmare. I'd wake up like, oh my God, how did I get here? Who are these people? What's happening? I just hung in there for the time that I was there and graduated basic training. And then off I went to tech school in Lowry Air Force Base. Now, I'm 23, so I'm legal. I can drink wherever the hell I go. So I finally get an opportunity to celebrate, and that's in tech school. They have a 21 club for special people like me. And they served iced teas in the solo cups at the 21 club, and it was just glorious. And we're not talking about the iced tea that I drink today. We're talking about the good iced tea. So I had lots of problems while I was at tech school. You know, I dragged people back to the barracks. We weren't allowed to have people in our rooms. I ended up, in the first sergeant's office. And, I just cried the tears and played the victim and talked my way out of my bullshit. And off I went to Korea. And that's a special place for a drunk like me. We drank alcohol out of like Tupperware bowls and that looked like Kool-Aid. And it's kind of like, the first one who gives up first on the straw, is the pussy. We're not supposed to talk like that, but. So I was not going to be that person, okay? I was going to see it through. And I was such a victim while I was in Korea. It was like different language, different culture. There was a lot going on. I'm far from home. The taxi drivers drove crazy. There were so many reasons to drink. There were open meat markets with dog and cat. And that, I would just be like, I just can't take it. And I would be drunk. And throughout the course of my time there, the guys that I worked with really enabled me. They'd let me kind of sleep it off in the morning. They'd say, now go have lunch, and then we're going to work you hard in the afternoon. And I'll be like, okay, and whatever. So they tried to manage my drinking problem for the majority of the year and eventually got sick of my shit. And I ended up getting charged with a drunk on duty and assault. And I'll tell you right now, I'm a lover, not a fighter. Okay, so don't try to jump me after the meeting and I'm going to give you a hug. I'm not a fighter. But I'm a blackout drinker, so I don't know if I assaulted that girl or not. They said I did. I don't think I would assault her, but what do I know? And so they took my blood, and about 12 hours after my last drink, I was at like a 0.19. So they were able to charge me with legally drunk on duty. And in the end, they ended up dropping the assault charge. I asked my friend, which we called Fred, I said, "Fred, did I hit you? Did I hurt you?" And she said, "No, Brenda, you like lunged forward and slid down the wall." It was an alcoholic assault. But, you know, the guys were sick of my shit, you know? They were tired of dealing with a drunk like me, full of shit, full of ego. And so I went to a 28-day custody thing as part of the punishment. And of course, I was on lockdown. I didn't have access to booze. You know, the master sergeant that ran the place, he kept trying to teach me how to drink. He's like, "Oh, well, you don't have a drinking problem. You just need to, you know, quit at 8 p.m. And, you know, the guys would try to tell me throughout the year in Korea, "Brenda, you know, go have a good dinner, and then you need to stop drinking at 8 p.m. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna try that. So I'd go have dinner, and then I'd go out. But when 8 p.m. comes around, I mean, it's on and cracking. I mean, I'm like rocketed into the fourth dimension. I'm like, "Let's do this, baby. I can't go lay down at 8 p.m. I mean, alcohol was my master. I mean, I wasn't going anywhere till alcohol said I was done for the night, which led to waking up in a lot of different interesting places. Waking up on bathroom floors and wondering, you know, and I mean, that's part of my drunk on duty on assault, was that I was late for duty and had slept through just a mess. And it was like that for like the whole year that I was in Korea. And you know, my sergeant that ran our shop, he would say, "Brenda, do you think that you're an alcoholic?" And I'd say, "Yeah, I think I'm an alcoholic, but it's not a problem." And yeah, it's not a problem. As long as I've got booze, it's not a problem. Yeah, all this life stuff is a problem. But anyway, so I actually finally get to leave Korea. And I'm ordered, I do go home for leave, which was a bad situation. And but, you know, one more of my adventures, I went home on leave, and I'd went out like the night before I'm supposed to leave for the airport. And of course, I go into a blackout. I've got grandma's car, because, you know, I don't have a car anymore. I can't be trusted to have a car or drive, because I love driving drunk. And so got grandma's car. I pick somebody up. I'm in a blackout. I wake up face down in a motel room. I don't know where grandma's car is. I don't know who these dudes are at the door of the motel. Luckily, grandma's car was there. I had missed my flight to LA, and, you know, there were a couple guys waiting to pick me up from the base to take me out to Edwards. And so I get on a later flight. You know, grandma says, "I'm not taking you to the airport." And, you know, I'm like, "Fuck you, I'll catch a cab." I mean, no thought of anybody else. The whole flight to LA, I am saying, "I can't drink anymore. I cannot drink anymore. I'm not going to drink anymore. I'm not going to pick up a drink anymore. I cannot drink anymore." And make it to LA. The guys picked me up. They didn't seem mad that I was late. And they stop at Century, that Arco there on Century, and they're picking up a case of beer and offering me beer. And I said to them, didn't you read my file? Don't you know who I am? And they said, oh yeah, but that's Korea. Everybody does that in Korea. So, you know, I like that. Oh, okay, so it was just a situational thing. And but I didn't drink. I was like, no. So, but I white-knuckled it for about 2 weeks out at the base. Finally, somebody asked me to go buy them some booze because I was in the barracks with the youngsters. And so I said, yeah, I'll do that. And then I was off and running one more time. So 2 weeks is my max for white-knuckling it. It's pretty miserable. That was pretty miserable 2 weeks. I'd kind of surround myself with people who would tell me I'm not alcoholic. I don't have a drinking problem. I had a Korea problem. And so I was just a mess. But I don't think I'm a mess at the time. And so I get ordered to, at the time it was called Social Actions. It's probably called Mental Health now out at the base. And I met with a counselor, and she says, what do you want to do about your drinking? And I don't know where this little bit of honesty came, but I said, you better send me to rehab, or I'm just going to bullshit my way through this. And so rehab was ordered, and I was doing meetings out at the base, and I'd met a guy in the barracks named Dino. He gave me my first big book. And so we'd run into town to some meetings. We'd hit the open door. It was like the first one coming into Lancaster. So we did a lot of meetings at the open door. And you know, the guys out at base that were in the program doing meetings with me just were like, she's never going to get this thing. She's never going to make it. And I'd come into the old Palmdale Hospital speaker meeting. And we'd all come in on a van from the base, and they'd try to be loving and, hi, you know, smiley, and, you know, what brings you to AA or whatever? And I would just cuss them all out on the van. That was where my head was at. But what had ended up happening was I got ordered to do detox at the hospital there on base, so 3 days of detox. By this time, I met some Christian guys in the barracks, and I got the little AAers, and they're all coming to my detox room, and I felt like I was just being attacked on all sides. You got the Christian brothers coming in, I got the AA guys coming in. And I don't know, I just, that second day, I hit my knees and asked God for help. And I think I just said, God, help me. And then off I went to March Air Force Base for 28-day rehab. And that was pretty demoralizing. I was in my dress blues, and I'm stepping off the elevator at the alcohol rehab. Like, that's where my best thinking had gotten me. Was to hospitalized rehab at March Air Force Base. And I really was full of shit and a bullshitter, and so it was small. I think there were 6 or 8 of us in this treatment program. And I was gonna prove to the Air Force that I was not alcoholic and I did not need this shit. And I was gonna prove that by doing everything they told me to do. And so in group, when I said I hated my mother, and they which I felt was normal for girls to hate their mother, and they're like, gee, you may want to write about that. And I was like, I don't know. I'll have to think about that. But I did end up writing about that. So I was a good little rehabber. You know, I was going to show them, I'm superwoman in rehab. And I did that writing and the crying and the sharing with the group, and things were changing on my situation. And we hit the Arid Club for a meeting that evening. And I just started hitting meetings hard with him. And we would come in and, well, we got some speeding tickets in the Air Force van and then couldn't take the van. But we would come in. So I met back to that Women's Stag meeting. That became like core to connecting me with sobriety. If I was just sharing with Sarah, like, if I wasn't working, which when I got out of the Air Force, I wasn't working till I found a job, I was at meetings. And in between meetings, I was filling out job applications. And I just started doing AA. And my first sponsor, Becky, you know, I said, she was talking about her God was going to fry her in hell, and that she'd found a loving God in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, well, to myself, my God's going to fry me, so I don't even know how I'm going to do this. I better talk to this lady. And so she started spoon-feeding me this program. Now, when I went up to her, I said, Hi, I'm Brenda. I'm ready to work the four-step. And, you know, because in rehab, they kind of make you do like 1, 2, 3 or some, I don't know. The thing you do in rehab. So back then it was like 1, 2, 3. So I said, I'm ready to work step 4. And she said, well, sweetie, we're going to start with step 1. And you know, that hurt my feelings. But I just went, okay. And it, you know, it's such a weird thing because the book is old. And it was, you know, published in 1939. And it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but I think I can read, so I think I got this. But it's really helpful to have some help to interpret what's going on with that book. And what was weird about this lady was she would invite me over to her home, and she would be having me help her make her bed and shit like that. And talking program and reading stuff out of the book. And I was like, what does this laundry have to do with AA? Because I'm smart, don't you know? And I don't realize what's happening in the midst of all that. But, you know, I am people pleasy. And so I went along with it. And her husband was an active alcoholic, and so she'd say, yeah, go get a Coke out of the fridge, and there'd be like Budweiser in there, and I was like, whoa, you know, how is she living with alcohol, kind of a thing. So, and I don't even know why I'm telling you that, but she just started, she would spend time with me after that Monday night meeting, and we would talk, and things started to change. And at the meetings, you guys were telling me to keep coming back. And there was a guy at the open door that said, Brenda, you're a winner, keep coming back. And boy, people weren't asking me to come back anywhere. You know, they were like, get your shit and get the fuck out. And so this was some new territory, keep coming back. And I don't know how we're doing on time. We're good. So I'm already sober, so we're good. And so Biker Steve was his handle back then. And he would, we had lots of handles, DJ Steve, Biker Steve, man. But he would tell me to keep coming back, you're a winner. And I was like, oh, okay. The other thing that happened for me is I like dove into Christianity because I saw God in the steps, and I kind of went back to like, you know, the religion of my childhood. And I got pretty fanatical with it, and which is okay. But that's what I did. That's part of my story. And so I would go to meetings at the Open Door, and I would share scripture, and I would show how it was, you know, like, this is step one. This is the scripture for step one. And like, you know, and that's how I was sharing. And God bless the people of the Open Door that loved me and told me to keep coming back. Right? I don't have a whole lot of compassion for people who may be sharing like I did. So it's amazing, right? That they tolerated my rantings, you know? And my sponsor would be like, because I was like, church, 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 church. And she's like, sweetie, do you think maybe you could get another AA meeting in there somewhere? And I'd be like, well, I don't know. I'm going to have to pray about that. So when I tell you I'm a knucklehead and that people didn't think I would stay sober, you have no idea. You guys do not even know. This is what you see up here is 31 years later, which may not look like all that much, but from where I was when I came in at about 24, it's been a journey for sure. So, and I would listen, I'd be like, okay, and I'd you know, pop in an extra meeting, and something happened to me at church that got me irritated. There was an alcoholic guy that had come Wednesday night to church, and you know, the brothers were trying to, you know, help him after church, and you know, I went up and was trying to 12-step him, and they're like, sister, we got this. And I was like, okay. Okay, you got this. Okay. So that was just one thing for me. Like, I don't know. It was just an experience that I was like, okay, they think they know what this man needs. And I don't know what this man needs, but I don't know. God brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what I do know. And I had my first sober Christmas, I went home. And I bought everybody in the family big books. And I wrapped them. I wrote a little something. And I wrapped those motherfuckers. And I passed those out. I was on fire, baby, not just for Jesus, but for Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay. And I went and saw an old Get High neighbor friend of mine in Tampa. And she got to see this new sober version, and we were talking, and she says, you know, Brenda, one of these days you're going to wake up in a yellow dress in the church and you're going to run out of that motherfucker screaming. In other words, I needed to get real about me and who I am. And I'm grateful for that. So I was able to get my feet down on the ground. You know, the book talks about feet made of clay. Head in the clouds, but our feet made of clay. I need to be on the ground. I cannot run from my pain. I cannot run from myself. And Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a way to do that without using drugs and alcohol. Throughout the course of my 31 years, it's been about step work and sponsorship and hanging out with you guys. And that mom that I hated, I mean, I did lots of step work and some therapy and more step work. And about 5 years ago, I was able to invite my mom to come out here to live. She was struggling health-wise, and I said, why don't you come out to California? And she did. And I got a big gift. I got 5 years opportunity to get to know my mom and be closer to my mom. And I'd had, you know, I don't know, 24 years of being able to heal that relationship and continue to heal that here the 5 years that she was here. I just lost her. She passed away September 14th. And I'm just so grateful for the gift of being able to have her in my life in a way that At the beginning of my sobriety, you could have never told me that we would have been hanging out on Sundays, watching football, and picking out on some wings, and just being. And, you know, people, I'd say, I got to go pick up my mom, you know, after the open door meeting. And people would say, you get to. And I'd say, that's right, I get to. And I got to for 5 years. And I'm so grateful. And the people in these rooms walked me through every step of her very rapid health decline, her going into placement, and her passing. And I'm just so grateful that I don't have to drink and I don't have to use, no matter what's jumping off in my life. And you guys have taught me that. I pick up the phone, I pick up the pen, I get on my knees, and I just do the next indicated thing. And I'm just so grateful for the life that I have. I mean, when I came in, the attraction was, people said they were going to school, they were getting a house, were working jobs, and I was like, ooh, that's attractive. And so if anybody needs, you know, I got a house, I've got a degree, I got a car, like, and I've been able to hold down a job, and I couldn't do those things before Alcoholics Anonymous. So I think of AA like the army. You can be all you want to be. Whatever you be, all you can be in Alcoholics Anonymous. Whatever I want to be, I can be. But AA must come first for me. God's sponsorship in the steps got to come first. Wife or no wife, job or no job, mom or no mom, Alcoholics Anonymous must come first. And then there's work I have to do. It's not a white knuckle thing for me. The steps for me, there's no way I could stay here without the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. They give me really everything that I need to have a useful, whole, peaceful life. And of course, life is going to show up, but those tools allow me to walk through those things. And of course, getting love from you guys and direction and showing up to stuff like this. So thanks, guys, for coming and listening to me. I really appreciate you. That's all I've got.